Hello, hello. Happy Friday, everyone. How has my week has been like nonstop? I took a nap today. I never take naps, like ever. Like it takes a lot for me to nap. So I must have been burnt out for me to even take a nap. And that entire nap was filled with a ton of anxiety. So there's also, it's like a useless nap, you know? You're just lying down. You're like, shut up, brain. My brain's like, what about this? What about that? Do you go through this? I go through this all day. Anyways, welcome, you guys. Welcome to another episode of Minority Reports podcast and digital series. I'm your host, Mona Shake. I hope you guys enjoyed my episode yesterday because we had the wonderful and amazing Congresswoman Katie Hill on, and we got into some really fantastic conversations. And today's guest is also pretty wonderful and amazing. I'm so glad that I have an opportunity to get in touch with him and to bring him on as a guest. This guy, you know, he's a trailblazer, okay? He has a fantastic bio, but it's a very long bio, so I'm just going to cut it short. My very, very special guest today is an American writer. He's an activist. He's a city official in West Hollywood, California. He's also the only child of singer Belinda Carlisle from the Go-Go's and film producer Morgan Mason. And he is the only grandchild of the late British actor James Mason and his wife, media personality Pamela Mason. I mean, this guy has accomplished a lot in, you know, he's a lot younger than I am, but he's a rock star in his own, you know, right. And we'll talk a little bit more about when we bring him on. So please welcome my very talented friend, James Duke Mason. James, welcome.
Hello there. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Yes, I'm so glad that you could join us. This is lovely. I was telling you that I look very orange, and I was trying not to look orange. So there we are. Less orange.
I'm very purple. So we're very colorful tonight.
Very colorful people here. How are you doing? How do you like the heat, James?
I love it. I mean, okay, 9,500 degrees is maybe a little extreme, but I'm a California summery, sunny kind of guy. You know, that's just my natural disposition. So
right. That's right. Because you're born here, but then you moved to the south of France as a kid, correct?
I did. Well, I was born here. Yeah, I was born right down the street. In fact, at Cedars Sinai. So I'm a real WeHo local. And then when I was two, my parents and I moved to France, and I lived mostly in France, a few years in England as well, for about the 16 years of my life. Wow. And then when I was 18, I always knew I wanted to come back to LA, and yeah. You know, my parents are both from California, and I always had, weirdly, because I didn't grow up in America mainly, but I always had a real interest in American politics, and so yeah. I always kind of knew that LA was home, and that's where I wanted to come back to one day. So even when I lived there, this was the place that I felt like I belonged, you know.
When you were in France growing up, did you learn French? Did you learn any other languages?
I did. I definitely learned French. Whether I remember it very well is another question. You know, it's weird because I lived there. I think I actually intentionally sort of tried not to learn it because I think I always wanted to be like this American kid, and I knew that I wanted to be in American politics one day. So I was like a weird kid. I was an American political junkie and gay and like, you know, on the son of a musician. I was a very odd kid, where I live, but I went to an American school, so I wasn't completely a fish out of water, but I definitely was not your typical kid growing up there. So, but long answer version of me, short version is, yes, I speak French, but I've forgotten a lot of it since I moved back, unfortunately.
You know, James, you can just, I have a new French neighbor who moved in, and honestly, if you would have just straight up lied and you're like, no, I totally speak fluent French, I'd be like, yeah, you probably do, James. I believe you. You could like totally bullshit me and I'll be like, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. You probably speak French, you know.
I occasionally pull out a few words here and there to impress. But yeah, like you said, if a fluent French person sat across from me, they'd be like, oh no, this guy's for.
Do you bust out the few words in French? Is that it, like during the dating life? Like on a you're just like
occasionally. Yeah, I'll be like. Oh, yeah. Je m'appelle Duc, comment ça va? Oui, j'ai étudié en France, mais maintenant j'habite aux États-Unis. That's literally all I think I remember how to say. What my name is, where I live now. So yeah.
That's I love that. You know, this is a question I have, and I think about this a lot for kids who are or like grandkids of people who are famous. Like, you know, it's a different life, it's a different world, and you know, a lot of people are just like, you know, although it has this level of like comfort or even privilege of some kind, but I feel like when you're like a grandchild or if you're like a child of like a famous person, you know, there's an added pressure to kind of live up to certain standards because people are like, oh, you're a kid of so and so, like what are you doing? Like, what are you know? Versus me, my parents are just like unknown people. So I was just like, whatever I do, I'm winning. Like, whatever I do at this point, I'm winning. Although South Asian parents have incredibly high standards for their kids, and nothing is ever good enough. So I actually wanted to ask you, like, growing up, like you come from like Hollywood royalty because your grandfather was a very successful British actor, and then being the only child of Belinda Carlisle and your dad Morgan Mason. What was like the first time as a kid you were like, holy shit, we're famous?
You know, that's a good question. I do remember, I mean, obviously I remember touring with my mom a lot, and then I remember, you know, occasionally weird things would happen. Like, I mean, just off the top of my head, for instance, I remember when I've talked to my mom and dad about this and gone like, what the hell is that about? Like when Courtney Love and her daughter, Frances Bean, came to stay with us in France. And I remember for whatever reason, even as an 8-year-old, I remember like knowing who Courtney Love was and thinking like, why is she here? But what's even weirder about it is they weren't even necessarily like close friends. I think they had like a mutual friend and she was like, hey, you know, I'm coming to France. Yeah, could I stay with you guys? And my parents, I guess, were like, sure. But like, you know, things like that, things like going on tour with my mom. I remember as a kid, my dad and I went to England and we went to they had a bust unveiling of my grandfather in his hometown of Yorkshire in Huddersfield. And Patrick Stewart was there to unveil the bust. And so weird little things like that. But I always say, and I mean this, you know, I feel so lucky that I actually wasn't the kid of someone like, let's say, Madonna or someone like that, because my parents are both, and my grandfather, even in his time, were very modest, very sort of non, they're not the kind of people that have ever sought the spotlight. And my mom is very private. She's very comfortable living a low-key life. She never attends award ceremonies or any of that kind of stuff. And that's a conscious choice that they've always made. So, you know, I've always had the benefits of growing up in an entertainment family, but also not being under that constant sort of scrutiny that I think I would be if I were like the son of Madonna or, I don't know, Michael Jackson or, you know, someone of that kind of level of fame, you know?
Sure. Like, did you ever, I mean, you come from a line of, like, your bloodline is entertainers. So what made you like, you know, go, you know what, I know you're a writer and you still have that creative side to you, but you're primarily more focused on politics. What made you more attracted to politics more than entertainment?
Well, it was a weird thing because my dad worked in the Reagan administration in the early 80s, and he was in the State Department. He was deputy or special assistant to the president for a couple of years in the early 80s. So, I mean, he's not a Republican. He's always, in fact, it's funny because occasionally, like I'd have my own YouTube show that I've done. And occasionally it's like a guest who knows my dad will be like, yeah, well, it's funny how you're a liberal and your dad's a conservative. And my dad will literally write in the comments, I'm not a Republican or I'm not a conservative. And he always has to make that clear because he's not a Trump person and he's not a conservative, but he was sort of a libertarian and he worked in the Reagan administration. So I grew up sort of with that, you know, being aware of that. And he would show me memorabilia and, you know, stuff from his days in the White House. So, you know, I always had an awareness of that. But then I also grew up at the height of the Bush, Iraq war era. And So I remember like being literally being 12 and my mom and dad taking me to go see Fahrenheit 9/11. And I mean, that's heavy. Yeah. So, I mean, so my dad, my dad's political experience that I sort of grew up being aware of. But on the other hand, my mom has always been a super militant liberal feminist, you know. So I grew, so it was sort of a mix of the two. I got my dad's interest in you know, being in politics and my mom's political views. And they sort of melded together. And yeah. Then when I was 12, you know, I volunteered on Kerry's campaign. When I was 15, I volunteered on Hillary's campaign. So I started very young. And then I was, you know, I was a page in Congress when I was 16. So I've always, from a very young age, it's just something that I naturally gravitated towards.
Right. And now you, you know, you were a co-chair, it says here, right? For the... Yeah.
Well, so it's funny because, yeah, I was gonna say, it's funny because sometimes people go like, they go like, the you're the co-chair of the what? Because a lot of people don't know that, and you know, I get it because it's very, it is sort of a local government thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, under the, a lot of most city councils, including the West Hollywood City Council, they have a lot of commissions and advisory boards that deal with various different issues. So, you know, in WeHo, we have a transportation commission, a planning commission, a transgender advisory board, a Russian, because there's a big Russian community in West Hollywood, Russian advisory board. And the purpose of all these boards and commissions is obviously they advise the city council. And these are people that are appointed by the city council. So yeah. About 5 years ago, I was appointed by John Heilman, who's been on the WeHo City Council for, you know, 35 years. He's like the George Washington of founding father of WeHo. But he appointed me to the Lesbian and Gay Advisory Board for West Hollywood. So, you know, I've been on that board for about 5 years. And, you know, it's a small town, but West Hollywood is because of the fact it's sort of an LGBTQ mecca and the fact that, you know, obviously it's in the middle of one of the most, you know, being Los Angeles, one of the most important cities in America. I think, you know, it sort of has sort of an outsized influence. And yeah. I feel lucky that I've had the opportunity to help serve and advise the city and recommend ideas and policies for the city that might be beneficial for the community.
Yeah. Do you have any now, you know, I was watching, you have a podcast now, it's called Duke's Downloads, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. At the beginning of quarantine, it's something I'd always wanted to do. And I made a few like initial attempts in the past to start doing YouTube videos. And I wasn't quite sure how to do it. But then during quarantine, it was like, okay, now I definitely have the time to say half an hour a week or an hour a week to do interviews. So, yeah, in March, I started doing a you know, half hour interview. And I mostly, you know, it started mainly with people that I already knew from my Rolodex. But over time, it's turned into a really cool, I'm 20 episodes in, so I'm really proud of that. And thank you. And, you know, it's cool. I get to interview all kinds of different people, politicians. I interviewed the governor of Colorado, the first gay governor in U.S. history, which was really amazing. And I've interviewed Melissa Rivers, Margaret Cho, Craig Louganis, all sorts of different kinds of people. So that's been
amazing. Really fun. Well, Margaret's a homie of mine. So Margaret has, like, she's fantastic. She's had like a bunch of my shows. We've become a homie. So it's very nice. And she's one of those people who's like so accomplished and like so down to earth. Where you're just like, but you're Margaret Cho, like, but you're like awesome. Like you're like listed as Rolling Stone's top 50 comedians of all time, you know? Yeah. And then like she'll come to my shows and I'm like, why are you gonna get you something? She's like, no, I'll just go get it myself. And I'm like, stop it. Stop being so cool. Stop it. You're too humble. I just adore her. I think she's so lovely and wonderful. Yeah. You know, one of the people you had on as a guest is Cooper Hefner. And I got invited to this kind of like an auction thing in Beverly Hills for Hugh Hefner when he passed on with like all his like memorabilia and all, like all kinds of like incredible stuff. And I met Cooper there briefly. I know also Cooper through another mutual friend who's also friends with Cooper. So I just kind of have like this 1 and 2 degree separation with Cooper. And I was listening to him and he was talking about that he's enlisted for 8 years in the U.S. Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
He has a kid now. Yeah. And he, you know, one time a month, like what, for a week every month he has to go, like, you know, he signed up for it. I mean, which is always incredible and so honorable whenever whoever serves the country. I actually wanted to ask you, is that like something that you've ever thought about, or is that something you would consider? Or
there was a brief moment when I was a teenager when I thought about it, but the truth is that at the time, up until I was, I guess, about, I mean, I was pretty young when Jonas Don't Tell got overturned, but I think, you know, when I did think about it, when I was like 14 or 15 or 16, you know, Jonas Don't Tell was in place at the time and I was already out. And so I sort of put that to one side and never really went back to it. And then, you know, obviously when I came back to LA when I was 18, I was in college. I was involved in campaigns. I ran for city council when I was 22. So I was already sort of firmly on my path by the time that it even became an option for someone like me, you know. But I mean, I it's almost hard for me to express like how I, you know, how much I admire people who and like that's why I was a big you know, Mayor Pete supporter, because I really admire that, you know, people like that. I think people that that have that kind of self-discipline.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of quality that you want in a leader and in a politician. And so that's the reason I supported Pete. Same reason why I'm really behind Cooper, because I think he really possesses a lot of the qualities, thoughtfulness, you know, empathy, integrity, humility, self-discipline, that I think we really should have in our leaders. Unfortunately, obviously, who we have in power right now is the literal opposite of all of the words.
Even his own, like, even the, like, I was just listening to the Young Turks, which I've been on a few times, as you know, as a comic to bring me on so I can crack jokes at things. And I was listening to them, and even like people like who are in the Fox News, like off the record, know that even Sean Hannity's like, Trump is a fucking lunatic. Like, he's a lunatic. Okay, there's no ifs or buts about it. I think that when he's in 4 years, he's caused enough destruction, enough, you know, need to get rid of democracy, that this man, you know, and I mean, to me, it's fascinating. Like, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, you know, one of the things that I was actually very impressed by you is that I was on your website and I saw, you know, because you write for the Huffington Post, you write for LGBTQ Nation. And, you know, back in March, for Kamala Harris, you endorsed her as the VP candidate back in December of 2019, which is very, you know, very, very Nostradamus of you. but I was, and I was just like, man, I was like, I wanted to ask you, why did you pick Kamala Harris? Why did you think she was the best kind of VP candidate back in December 2019?
Because, you know, I she was my candidate for president at the very beginning. And, you know, I met her, I only met her once, but I met her briefly at the California Democratic Convention back in January 2018. Yeah. And so from that point on, I was sort of pretty sure that, you know, there was already anticipation that she may run for president. And so when she ran for president, initially I was behind her. And then I think I actually ended up in a predicament that, you know, I did some reading. You know, I remember reading a Politico article about how a lot of Californians were really torn because on the one hand, we love Kamala. We voted for her for attorney general, for senator. But a lot of us also, especially in the LGBTQ community, felt a really strong affinity for Pete Buttigieg. So we were in this sort of torn position of being torn where we were like, we love Kamala, but we also love Pete. So, you know, so actually when I wrote that article, it was right after she dropped out of the race. And I was like, my dream ticket at the time was Pete and Kamala. That's sort of what I was gunning for at the time. But I said in the article, look, whoever it turns out to be, whether it's Pete, Bernie, Joe, obviously, I hope that she gets the VP position because I've always been a huge fan of hers.
Yeah. I mean, Kamala, you know, honestly, for me, when she did her VP acceptance speech, like, it just had me in tears. You know, for me, James, like, look, I'm an immigrant. Like, I was born and raised here, right? I moved here at 15 from Pakistan. I mean, just, you know, it's like that poor immigrant struggle of like just kind of climbing up. I don't think I ever thought that in my lifetime I would ever see a candidate who would remotely look like me or be of my background and run on a major political party in America. Like, that is like surreal for us. Like, for me to like, for her to be up there and watch her in a sari, wearing a sari, is like surreal. You're like, oh my God, this is like someone who looks like me. And like, this is a possibility. Like, look, it's not a possibility for me because I'm a naturalized citizen. That would never happen for me. But there are so many.
Senator, governor.
How about the governor? Yes, yes. I am never getting into politics, James. All those dick jokes that I've been slinging on stage, all this, you know how much they're going to be surfacing with all the memes? I mean, I would have a kick out of them. I'd be laughing my ass off. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be very good for my campaign. But
the important thing is it could, like, it used to be like me in the military and all those things. It used to be that we couldn't do certain things. At least now you know, someone like me or someone like you can say we could do it if that's what we, you know, that our race or our sexuality or whatever else, yes, it wouldn't be a hindrance, you know?
That's correct. It's a lot more accepted. And now, given the current sitting president, the bar is lowered so much. Well, you're like, oh my God. I was thinking about, like, I think it, the Kardashians were thinking about, like, you know, kind of positioning themselves. And I was just like, yeah, that sounds about right. We have one reality show asshole in there. Why not another reality show asshole? Like,
I have no doubt. My mom and dad and I have talked about the fact that, you know, I have no doubt. After what we've seen in the last few years, there's no doubt in my mind that Kim Kardashian could run for U.S. Senate or some, or even just run for the presidency and have, maybe not win, but she would have a real chance. I mean, you know.
I'm scared, James.
I'm scared. Hopefully, I pray that because of what we've been through the last few years, that people will, you know, once Trump is gone, God willing, then people will have sort of a change in their perspective.
You mean raise their standards back to standards. Hey, right. not anybody can be president. Like, you need to meet certain qualifications. You need to be a certain person of character. Yeah. You can't just be anyone who's like had a sex tape and their mom peddled it in the street. Like, you can't be that person. Like, for God's sake, like, no, please, God, no, make it stop. You know, it's like, well,
I always say, and I say it literally, I don't mean it like hyperbolically. It still boggles my mind how out of a country of 330 million people,
yes,
out of everyone that we could have chosen to be president, we chose someone who literally, I think, more than anyone I can think of, is like, to a cartoonish extent, the perfect storm of every terrible quality I can think of.
Yeah.
I've never seen someone that embodies every terrible quality, you know, gluttony, no empathy, selfishness, greed. How do we find someone so terrible and pick them to be president of the United States? It just blows my mind. I don't get it.
You know, James, I think the one thing that I've learned from Trump's presidency is that I feel like, you know, having lived in another country, when I lived under a dictatorship for a bit, mm-hmm, and then moving here, I feel like, you know, our leaders are the reflection of our conscience as a nation, right? I feel like, you know, we had Obama, and at the time people were like, yes, you know, this is a good person to lead us. That's why he got selected twice. But here's this guy that is literally reflecting the worst of American conscience. You know, you didn't vote for him. I definitely didn't vote for him. I mean, but there are a shit ton of people who thought that he was the right leader, you know? And yep. I really
pray. It shouldn't have even been close. That's the thing. It shouldn't have even been close. That's the
100%,
thing.
100%. Yeah. But what does that say about the society that we have? What does it say about, look, you and I kind of live in a vacuum in the sense that we live in like these big cities that are, you know, kind of thriving, very like melting pot, very like multicultural, very diverse. But, you know, you go out in like Montana and like Utah or like super conservative red states like Mississippi, you're just like, they look at you and I like we're aliens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's scary, you know, because I have to admit, I know a few people who I wouldn't even categorize as Trump supporters. They're like, I think they're people who claim that they don't like Trump, but they still buy into a lot of things where I go like, you know, whether it's QAnon or not that they buy into QAnon, but you know, they'll mention things like, oh, but I read that, you know, Tom Hanks is a pedophile or something. And I go like, my God, like, and these are it for in every other sense, as far as I know, pretty well-educated, smart, rational people. Yeah. And I go like, how can they buy into this stuff? And I think that shows that if even smart, educated, well-informed people can occasionally buy into those sorts of, you know, whether it's because they just see a piece of information that's fake, but they think it's real, or they're swayed because of, you know, they see it, whatever it is. That means that if even people in art places like LA are buying into that occasionally, that, yeah, it's a completely different universe in a place like Utah or Mississippi or, and occasionally I'll watch like, not just for fun, I'll watch like Tucker Carlson or whatever. If I'm eating, having, you know, a drink or something, I'll turn it on. And he says things where I go, like he said the other day, he goes, well, we know that, they showed a clip of President Obama speaking at John Lewis's funeral. And he said, we know that President Obama is the most arrogant, you know, politician in American history or something. And I went, even if you don't like Barack Obama or don't agree with him, on what planet does anybody think that this guy is the most arrogant, most, you know, whatever, radical president in history? I'm like, Jesus Christ. These
you
people-
know what it is, James? Everything that they say about Obama, or worst president ever, yeah, are the very things is what Trump is, mm-hmm, right? The level of projection by the supporters of Trump is, yeah, really like nauseating. I mean, the lack of awareness, the lack of self-awareness, you're just like, I'm gonna vomit right now.
Well, like, I don't know. Is it lack of self-awareness? Or, I mean, I think it is in some cases, but I also think some of them do it intentionally because they love driving, they think they're driving liberals crazy by having this, like when Mitch McConnell said, when they asked him, would you hold the same standard if a Supreme Court justice died now that you did in 2016? Would you say, you know what, let's wait till after the election, you know? And he laughed. He literally laughed and was like, of course not. Like, we have power this time. We're going to fill the seat, even though that's in complete contradiction to what we said 4 years ago. So there, I think some of them, you're right, are totally delusional and don't see the difference. But I think some of them too are just don't give a shit and are just like, I don't care if we don't have any moral compass or sense of integrity.
Well, no, of course not, because the leader, the current leader of the free world, has somehow given permission, this carte blanche access to people to be horrific. Like, they're being rewarded for being horrific. Mm-hmm. You know, with the Obama administration, it was like, you were rewarded for being like somewhat of a fucking decent human being. Like, don't, at least at the bare minimum, don't be an asshole. That's it. That's all we're asking. Everything else is a fucking cherry on top, right? Just at the bare minimum, don't be an asshole. But at the bare minimum in Trump's administration is the bare minimum, you have to be an asshole. And then you just build on top, right? Somebody like Tucker Carlson, whenever I wanna like lose some weight, I watch Tucker Carlson so I can just barf my food right out right after I consumed it. Because these guys, just like the kind of stuff, like the kind of homophobic, you know, xenophobic, transphobic things that come out of their mouth, you're just like, dude, you don't think that this shit is being broadcasted? Like, you don't think the world's listening? Like, don't you have like a conscience about this kind of stuff, you know? And I really pray to God, James, like, you know, whenever, to me, it's like whenever somebody, and it always happens on the Republican side, by the way, on the conservative side, whenever they're just like, we will not vote for, you know, marriage equality, and we are, you know, gays do not, you know, do not deserve to have a cake made or some shit like that. They are the biggest closeted assholes. I'm like, you are so in the closet, dude. Like, seriously. The next thing you know, news coming out, all, he was like banging his assistant. I'm like, there it is.
Almost always. That's how it works. Almost always.
Never fails, man.
Even if they're not gay, maybe they're having an affair on their wife, or you know, with another woman, or there's always some level of hypocrisy. Almost without exception, it ends up that they're totally full of shit. You know.
So ridiculous.
What I think is funny is the mask thing. So. The conservatives will say it's my right to be served by a business, even though I'm not wearing a mask. Yeah. And yet, if a gay couple comes into their business and says, "I want to be served, you know, I want a cake," then they have a right to decide.
No. It's whatever serves their narrative, right? Yeah. Whatever serves their narrative.
Go through a million loopholes to justify. Yeah.
I have one of my avid watchers here, James. He's awesome. He says, my family voted for Trump. They were angry with the system and believed his BS. Hillary ran on the status quo, even though people wanted a change. Do you believe Hillary ran on the status quo, James?
Oh, I think you cut out at the end there. Can you say that one more time?
Oh, I was saying that, you know, James mentioned that Hillary ran on the status quo, even though people wanted a change. So I'm asking you, did you feel that way about Hillary?
You know, I was a big Hillary fan, you know, and I still stand by her. I think she was a really exceptional candidate. You know, if you think about the fact that every debate performance was stellar, not one mistake. So intelligent, so poised, so on point all the time. You know, so I always defend Hillary. And I also point out, as she's pointed out, you know, people who say, oh, she should have gone to Wisconsin. She went to Pennsylvania a lot. In fact, on the election night, her last rally was held in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And yet she still lost Pennsylvania. So it's not as if she didn't campaign in the right places. It's not that she wasn't smart or on point every single time. You know, and I think, you know, as she's also has pointed out, she did talk a lot about economics and about jobs and about, it's just the media unfortunately didn't cover it. They were more concerned about the email issue, which turned out to be the biggest, you know, empty, you know, story, whatever the term is, you know, of all time.
Yeah.
So I actually think, you know, look, is she the most telegenic or charismatic politician or entertainer? No. But that's not what I was looking for in a president. And I think now we actually see how detrimental that kind of thinking can be, you know, that, you know, the, you know, choosing someone based purely on presentation or on theatrics versus qualifications. And just last, I know I have a tendency to ramble, but like
I enjoy the rambling. Please keep going.
But no, just last thing is, you know, about Hillary is, it wasn't for me just that Trump won. I mean, yes, it was that, of course, I was devastated that he won. I mean, it was also that Hillary lost. Like, the fact that it would be one thing if she lost to, let's say, Jeb Bush or John Kasich or someone, where it's like, okay, you know, they're a legitimate person. We may not agree with them, but at least they're a legitimate, smart, you know, educated person. For her, the most qualified person in American history to lose to him, I remember I woke up the next morning and it's never happened to me. I was like convulsing. I was so, so devastated on a level. And then for the, and last, I know, the end of my rant, the indignity, I remember turning on the news, and this is the first time I cried, getting emotional right now, thinking about it. When I turned on the TV and I saw Trump's meeting with the Obamas at the White House. And I thought the fact that Barack Obama, a Harvard law educated constitutional law professor, this elegant, graceful, smart man, has to even meet with Donald Trump. And after the man basically questioned his humanity, you know, and like, I was like, that is so repulsive to me on like on a deep level. And so I still feel really, as you can tell, very passionate and about that, emotional about that.
You know, James, let's not forget that when, you know, let's not forget the awkward Tiffany Bach exchange. Remember the Tiffany gift? And she was like, Michelle was like, I don't know what to do with this. You know, and also let's not forget that Trump also accused Obama for bugging. Remember, he was just like, oh, yeah, he like has bugged my phone and he's listening to my conversation. It's like, you're a fucking psycho. Like,
the other night he tweeted it again. So when Obama was doing his speech at the convention, Trump tweeted, "He spied on my campaign," in all caps. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think people,
but no proof, no nothing to show for, right? That's the Trump way of conducting things, right? Throwing out these big statements with no backings. I'm sure you watched that interview, the Axios interview that took place with the Australian journalist Jonathan, who was interviewing him. You know, and Trump looked really, that was a really horrific interview, horrible interview. And, you know, he's being asked about, you know, just about the amount of deaths that are taking place in America. And, you know, he was like, do you know, he's like, you know, there is such thing as too much testing. Jonathan's like, what are you talking about? Who told you there's so much? He's like, read the books, read the manuals. What book are you talking about? What books? What manuals? On Amazon? Where am I ordering this? On Audible? Audiobooks.com? Where is this? What are you talking about?
It was beyond. It was really beyond. And all I can say is, and then the point where he said, you know, we're doing great versus the world or something. We're doing better than the world.
Yeah.
We're doing better than the world. He was like, what? The world?
Our cases are lower than the world. He's like, the world? Like,
thinking that because if you didn't test, then it would go away. No, the disease still exists. It's still spreading. We just don't have the numbers. But it's like 5 year old thinking, you know.
If you don't do the testing, James, then you won't. We won't know. I mean, come on, isn't that how logic works?
That just blew my mind, and I think that's sort of just indicative of I think in the end, hopefully, the way this is going to end is it's literally like it is the story of the emperor has no clothes.
Yes,
like, this man, as you said earlier, people don't talk about it enough. He is literally mentally ill, like severely mentally ill.
He's and very kind of, sick.
Even the press that doesn't like him, they kind of dance around that. Yeah. And like, we should be all in like a collective like panic attack right now. Like we have a severely mentally ill person as president of the United States. And it's not just narcissism. I think he has some kind of, without being a doctor, you know, I don't want to sort of,
Best words. I took the cognitive test. He couldn't even pass it, you know. A person, woman, man, camera, TV. What?
I'm proud of himself that he remembered that. He was like, it was like, oh, look how smart I am, you know.
But it's like, listen, numbnut, the only reason you took the cognitive test is to check if you have Alzheimer's or if you have early signs of Alzheimer's. Like, it's not a compliment. Like, you're not taking a Mensa test. Like, you're not a Mensa member. Like, what? What are you talking about, man? What? Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I was talking to a lot of my, like, comedian friends, and I was like, man, even we can't come up with this kind of whacked out shit. Like, we think of a lot of whacked out stuff. Like, but this is, like, whacked out on a level that we could never even come close to.
Well, if you look at that picture, going back to the Kardashians for a second, the picture of Kim and Donald in the Oval Office, I said, you remember that movie that came out like 10 years ago, Disaster Movie? And I think Kim, it was like one of those spoof movies, like Scary Movie, one of those kind of things. And they had like Kim Kardashian made a cameo in it. And I was thinking like, if in 2008, if they had one of those spoof movies where you had Donald Trump making a cameo playing the president and Kim Kardashian at the Oval Office, I mean, but now you look at that picture and you're like, that actually is reality?
Yes.
Even in 2008 or even 2010, if you had said Kim Kardashian will in the near future be visiting President Trump in the Oval Office, you'd be like, this cannot be real.
Listen, it makes sense, though. In Trump's Oval Office, or I would say in Trump's oral office, you would expect, like, a porn star to show up. You would expect, I mean, Kim is not even a porn star because you have to have at least some level of talent. But, you know, but in Kim's case, it's just like, you know, she made a sex tape and then mommy, you know, peddled it in the streets. And now they're famous, apparently, for reasons beyond anybody's comprehension. And they're just famous because
Really quickly, not to interrupt, I just wanted to say, I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine about this not too long ago, but I really think that the fact that Trump is president and the Kardashians are considered by a lot of people as America, like I remember, I don't want to interrupt what you just said, but like Caitlyn Jenner the other day, literally not in a funny way, said, yeah, we're America's royal family. Ooh. And I think the fact that the Kardashians, she was saying that about her family, that they, the Kardashians, are the America's royal family. And I think that the fact that they and the Trump and Trump are considered like the definition of success in America today, I think is it says everything.
I mean, it's disturbing. It's really, Nikki Glaser, who's a hilarious comic, she did a roast. It was a Rob Lowe's roast. Yeah, it was Rob Lowe's roast. And I believe Caitlyn Jenner was there. She was on the dais. And Nikki Glaser made this fantastic joke. It was one of the roasts. And she said, you know, you're a Republican, referring to Caitlyn Jenner. She's like, I don't understand. You've already have a possession over a woman's body. Like, I don't understand why you would be Republican. You have already taken over a body of a female. Like, you're already controlling one female. Why would you need to? I mean, for me, the saddest part about Caitlyn was that when she was going through the transition and the fact that she killed a woman, I was like, oh man, this does nothing for us as female drivers. Like, nothing. Our brand is like ruined. Okay.
I mean, look, I really admired what she did when she transitioned. I was like, wow, this is incredible. I remember watching with my father. I mean, he's a progressive guy, but, you know, to sit there and watch with the special that she did with, I forgot who the interviewer was. My dad and I were like, wow, this is incredible. You know, like, this is really it felt like a world changing moment, you know, when she did that interview. But then everything else that happened after that, it was like between saying, oh yeah, I'm against gay marriage. Like, you know, that was like, what? Like, how can you be a transgender woman and be against gay marriage? And, you know,
I'm a traditionalist. I'm like, you know what's not traditional? Being trans. Not traditional at all.
Like, we should all support each other in our own respective social justice, you know, political movements. And yeah, I mean, the fact that she couldn't see the big picture on that, I was just like, and on a lot of it, you know, the fact that she's still a Republican, as far as I know, is just, you know.
You know, James, you know what it is with these attention whores, as I like to call them, the Jenners and the Kardashians. To them, it's what serves them, right? Yeah. I mean, to them, like the fact that Kanye, who really should be given horse tranquilizers every single day just to calm him down, is out there and he's like, yeah, I'm going to run for the presidency. And it's like, it's just this giant distraction. It's like, dude, you have like power and influence, but you're also mentally ill. We already have one mentally ill guy in the office. We don't need another. Like, don't need another mentally ill guy.
I'm actually happy. And I say, like, I feel terrible for whatever he's going through, but I'm actually happy that he did that in terms of, because clearly, you know, if he had not done that, I think there's every chance that this thing could have gone even further, you know, and that he could have gotten on more on the ballot in more states and gotten more traction. But I'm happy. I mean, of course, I'm sad whatever he's going through. But on the other end, I'm happy that people see that this is clearly not someone who should be taken seriously. That, you know, that this is whatever it is. The point is, I fear that had he not done that public display of, you know, and whatever he was going through, we may be in a different situation now where, you know, a lot of people may have been thinking about voting for him. So people see now how crazy he is.
But you know what, James, you know what it is? Like, when people like Nick Cannon, also not very stable, like, he's just like, I'm going to vote for Kanye. It's like, Nick, those weird hats you're wearing are like messing your brain up. Take them off. And just watch the news and, like, inform yourself. Like, stop it. Stop it, Nick Cannon. Stop it. But, I mean, I feel it's like a bad episode of The Twilight Zone. you know? Remember, it's like all I'm waiting for is the theme music to start playing. Like, it's like, oh my God, it's we're in the fucking Twilight Zone. Like, what is happening? This is terrifying.
It really is. It really is.
I mean, now you also wrote in LGBTQ Nation in March, you chose Joe Biden. And what was your kind of reasoning behind that?
You know, my mom is a big Bernie supporter, and even back in 2016, and look, I love Bernie. I've always loved Bernie. And in 2016, it was more because I was a big Hillary person, and I had been. I was supported her in 08, so I had a strong affinity for her. It wasn't so much because I was against Bernie. I really admired him, and I'd known who he was, and you know, being a political junkie, I admired the fact that he'd always been a, you know, pro-gay rights, you know, always on the right side of all the big issues. 2020, you know, I was just very, I was on Kamala's team, then I was on Pete's team. And then in March 2020, when Pete dropped out, you know, to be honest, I don't know why I decided at that time. I mean, I do. I just thought that Biden made more sense in terms of, you know, the particular issues of this election. I wrote this on Instagram yesterday, that the fact that Biden has all these qualities, empathy, integrity, compassion, you know, he knows how to find common ground with people who are different than him, you know, politically. Yeah. Those are qualities that I think the reason that Biden finally achieved his dream of being the nominee after trying several times is he has the qualities that are particularly important for this election. You know, that I mean, those are always important, but particularly now, he's got the right qualities that we need at this moment, because we've been so lacking in those qualities for the last 4 years. So, you know, and even though I love Bernie, I've pointed out to friends of mine who are on the sort of on the more Bernie sort of side of the spectrum that Biden, yes, he's made mistakes. Yes, he voted on a few bad pieces of legislation over 40 years. He actually has done a lot of, in terms of actually achieving and passing progressive legislation, he's done a lot. He passed the first climate change bill, the assault weapons ban, violence against women, Obamacare, helped pass gay marriage. So he actually, you know, helped pass the Dodd-Frank bill, you know. So, I mean, he's actually done more in terms of passing progressive legislation more than almost any politician I can think of. That doesn't mean that in the midst of that, he's made a few mistakes. Sure. But I'd rather have somebody who has actually passed progressive legislation and has a track record of actually achieving these things than someone who, I don't mean Bernie when I say this. I just mean, that's, you know, I'd rather have somebody who has actually done it than someone who maybe is perfect and pure, but hasn't necessarily been that effective in actually doing it. So that's my long-winded way of saying I think Biden hopefully will actually pass progressive legislation when he's elected because he's done it before. You know?
I mean, I think Joe Biden is definitely more. I think he definitely sits more in the center. He's not like so far off. And I think a lot of people got scared because of Bernie because they just consider him like just progressive on a different level where they're like, oh my God, I can't. Like, look, AOC is accused of the same thing and she's part of that Bernie clan, right? She's like, you know, she's a branch off the Bernie clan for sure. I mean, she came out and what was it? Was it the second night of the DNC? She came and she endorsed Bernie Sanders. So that was like, wow. Everybody was like, what's going on? It's like, no, that's just part of the procedure. Like, that's just kind of.
I had friends who texted me because they're not necessarily as politically obsessed as I am. And they were like, wait, what just happened? Like, you know, why do they nominate Bernie? I'm like, it's a formality. You know, that's the way it works. It's recognizing and acknowledging him and his supporters and their accomplishment. But Biden already has the votes locked up, the delegates. Okay. So I had to like calm some people down. And even AOC came out after and said, she explained it on Twitter. She's like, just to make it clear, I had 1 minute. My responsibility was to nominate Bernie. And she even said, look, I endorse Joe Biden. I support Joe Biden. We're all on the same team. We're in this together. Yeah. So, you know, and then really quickly, one other thing I was going to say about that is I reject this whole idea that you're either one type of, you know, Democrat or the other. Yeah. There are occasionally candidates that I support that are more centrist. But then, like, for instance, I'm a big Joe Kennedy supporter, and, you know, I'm following him in this Massachusetts Senate race. Yeah. On the other hand, in that same primary in Massachusetts, there's this guy, Alex Morse, who's an openly gay young mayor in Massachusetts, who's running against a longtime Democrat incumbent, you know, and he's been endorsed by this, you know, AOC and the more progressive wing of the party, and I'm supporting him. So for me, it's not like you have to be pro, you know, establishment or pro insurgency. I think you can be both. And I think this constant, like, you know, battle between those two sides is really detrimental to the Democratic Party. I think it's possible to be both, you know, progressive and to also occasionally, you know, support candidates that are more in the middle, you know?
Sure. Do you feel, because I do, I feel like the Democratic Party has been pretty divisive. They haven't been very together. Republicans, mm-hmm. on the other hand, you know, I mean, minus people like Mitt Romney and John Kasich, and, you know, Colin Powell and these guys, like, most of the Republicans have just been very quiet. They don't really stand up to Trump. They don't say, hey, this is not going to happen. Like, we're putting our foot down, you know? And it almost is like the old GOP has blended in with the new GOP, and the old GOP is just told to shut up and sit in the corner. And they're like, yes, we're just going to keep quiet because, you know, we want to show unity on the front lines. But in the Democratic Party, it's not like that. Do you feel that way?
Yeah. And in fact, I remember during the primary, there was a really funny meme that said, Republicans will vote for a pedophile, you know, in Roy Moore's case, a rapist with Trump. Like, as long as they vote the right way on abortion and gay marriage and whatever else, and cutting taxes, we don't care. And in fact, I remember reading a quote, like McConnell or someone said, as long as their hand moves and they'll sign a bill, we don't care who the president is, as long as they'll do what we want them to do. With Democrats, like, Joe Biden voted for a tax cut for corporations in one bill in 1986, and that is disqualifying, you know? It's like, so... Yeah. I think in some ways it's a good thing that we actually have some standards and some, like, sense of integrity. On the other hand, I do think that this, and Obama has talked about this, President Obama, that this, like, constant purity test of, like, they have to be perfect on every issue, and, like, Joe Biden's the devil because he made a few bad votes over the years. No, we have to, like, recognize that whether he's perfect or not, it's not even close, the difference there, him and Trump. I mean, he's obviously a billion times better. And you know, we don't have the luxury of nitpicking about someone's vote 40 years ago on one bill. You know, this is a really big picture election, you know?
You know, Trump has an ad out, which I thought was hilarious. And it's, you know, it's like rioting happening and, you know, all kinds of, like, you know, they talk about defunding the police because that's the drum they're beating, right? And, you know, the Democrats, they want to defund the police and there's going to be riot in the streets. And it's like, hold up, that footage that you're showing is from Trump's America. That is not from the Democratic America. That is from Trump's America. Are his followers that stupid that they're just like, dude, these are images from, like, barely 2 months ago.
Like, they have a time machine and they're showing us footage from, like, a year from now. It's like, no, actually, it's happening right now.
Right.
It makes no sense.
And then just happened.
And then the other funny thing, which is on the same lines, I saw today was Pence on Fox News talking about, he said, you know, the picture the Democrats painted at their convention was so dark. And I'm like, wait a second. You're the ones that are every day saying, you know, America is going to be, you know, a hellscape, you know, of, like, riots and, you know, destruction if Biden is elected. So I'm like, actually, you guys are the ones that are the negative ones. Biden's saying we're in a dark place right now, but if you vote for me, we're going to go back to or go forward to a new, lighter, more positive future.
You have 4 years to, we were in lightness and then you just took us in darkness. And you're like, if you want 4 more years, I'll take you back to lightness. No, no, no. We were in lightness and you brought us into darkness. What makes you think that we'll take you? Look, I, you know, I'm not one of those people who's just like, fuck Trump and fuck Pence. Like, look, if you did something good, I'll recognize you and I'll give you kudos for that, right? But the fact that we are predominantly, you know, ruled by these people who, you know, that every day is a new low. Every day you just don't know. While you were just catching up to the low that we hit yesterday, today is going to be another new low. So you don't even have time to think about and catch up to that, right? So it's just this constant chaos. And I think, and I made this point yesterday, is that Americans had never had a dictator, right? Because the founding fathers of this country were really smart people, and they came up with a constitution that they wanted to make sure, ensure that not only were they going to have checks and balances, because the reason they wanted to have checks and balances is because they did not want the cycle that was in England and the life that they had escaped. They did not want that shit repeated here. Right. That's why checks and balances. We have we have groups that are checking each other. But this man single-handedly wants to demolish those checks and balances because that's how dictators come into existence. Now, it is a concept that is so far-fetched to Americans that they are somehow dismissing it as if it's like in this dystopian world. It's not in some dystopian world.
It could happen tomorrow. It could happen literally in less than 3 months' time. And I've been saying that for a while, you know, and I have friends who like, you know, who kind of dismiss it and say, oh, Duke, you're being an alarmist. I go, I've been saying for years, and a few other people have been saying it. I know Bill Maher has been saying it for a long time. We're acting as if this is some normal election, regular election, where the loser concedes gracefully and bows out. I think it's virtually a given, a guarantee that no matter what the result, Trump's going to at least try to put up a fight and say it was rigged and it's illegitimate. I'm not leaving. If it's a huge landslide, obviously it becomes harder for him to do. But, you know, the Biden campaign has been saying for months that it's going to get much tighter and much closer. Yeah. And we already see that the polls are tighter than they were a month or two ago. Yeah. So unfortunately, I actually think the most likely scenario is that it's a close election. It comes down to, let's say, Arizona and Wisconsin, and both of those are within a point or two. Yeah. And Trump says, I'm not leaving. And people, you're right. Most people go, ha, 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 like that, you know, what a preposterous thing. And I go, no, based on Trump's behavior, that is actually the most likely scenario. And then they say things like, oh, well, Pelosi becomes president. I'm like, that's only if everyone in the country sort of, that's if people acknowledge and respect and listen and follow the Constitution willingly.
Yes.
The reason that our system has survived is because we just assume everyone's going to go along with, you know, what the Constitution says. Oh yeah, like of course, someone's going to leave power gracefully or peacefully. No, we now realize that all those norms and traditions that we used to take for granted are now very much up for in question. So I think there's a very, not to be alarmist, but I actually have always felt that there's a very strong possibility that we end up in some kind of civil, maybe not a civil war, but some kind of civil, massive civil unrest for sure. Not even a question.
This man earlier in the, listen, just this past Monday, Rolling Stone ran this article and they talked about how Trump came out and said very blatantly, he came out and said that his, that he was lied to and that they spied on his campaign. That's why not only is he going to serve a second term, he's also going to serve a third term. This is not the South Asia or Middle East. Like, you can't just be like ruling shit just because. Mm-hmm. We have protocols in place. We have checks and balances in place. You can't just be like running your mouth whenever you feel like it. But this is where he's at. And he's already given basically a bat signal to his fucking crazies that, you know, he was asked in the beginning of the year, he was asked like, hey, if you lose, will you leave peacefully? And he just stopped and he goes, well, you know, there's going to be like a civil war if I don't win. That's a fucking bat signal to his batshit crazy supporters.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Oh, he's setting it up for sure.
I mean, he look, the fact that he was asked, like, he was like, oh, yeah, you know, the election results could take years, even months or years. Mm-hmm. In what country? Not in America. Mm-hmm. It's pretty immediate. Like, you know, then he comes out and wants to dismantle the United States Postal Service. When has that ever happened in the history of the United States? We were going through World War II and that didn't happen, man.
And like, the pandemic in 1918, 1920, we voted anyway, and we voted safely and peacefully. And yeah, I mean, you know, I think people are really living in fantasy land if they think that, you know, I think people are just in denial. They don't want to face the possibility. In fact, the high probability that there's going to be in 3 months something the likes of which we've never seen in modern history. And I think, you know, another thing is, the reason that 2000 went the way it did, you know, with the fact that it was resolved, first of all, we don't live in as polarized a country as we did even 20 years ago. But the reason it ended the way it did was because Al Gore, you know, being a good person, being, you know, a man of integrity and having been in the government for years, he said, look, I could get up there and make a speech and say, I don't accept the result, this legitimacy of this result. You know, the Supreme Court, it was 5-4, all five Republican appointees voted. He could have said, I don't acknowledge this result and I refuse to accept it. But he, you know, we used to think of this as sort of like a corny thing for him to say, but he was like, you know, I'm going to step aside for the peaceful transition of power and for the sake, he even said in his concession speech, for the sake of our democracy, I accept these results. He could have not done that. And now we face a scenario where, unlike Gore, and not only is it that Trump's not a good person, not the same kind of man as Al Gore, this is the incumbent president potentially going to say, I refuse to leave office. Yes. What does that look like? You know, that's what I'm really afraid of.
I feel like, I mean, look, he, you know, there is Trump's low is a bottomless pit, right? There is no bottom to how low he will drop, right? The fact, like, I had a guest on and we were talking about how he was forcing schools to be reopened, telling basically people to risk the lives of their children, and, oh, it's okay, send your kids out to the death machine, it's fine. And, you know, and I was just like, if his own grandkids get sick and die, if his own kids get sick and die, is that going to give him some level of conscience? And the truth is, it's not. His brother died last week, and he was golfing.
Did you see the response he gave when that interviewer, I guess on Fox, asked him about his brother?
He made it about himself.
It was so horrifying to read. It was like, yeah, he was my biggest fan. And yeah. I was just like, oh my God, this man is like, I can't believe a human being is this cartoonishly like, he is a walking, living SNL like parody of himself. It's like, it's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable.
He would get very upset when people won't know. He was very upset with China. Very upset with China. He's dead is where he is.
And then he said, he was never jealous. You know, he was always very happy for me and for my success. It was like, oh my God. Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's nothing you can say to that except, oh my God. Like, it's
I cannot wait to read Mary Trump's book. I have it on my audiobooks. Yeah. It's lined up, so I'm like ready to go and listen to it. But, you know, it's just like, he was endorsing the frontline doctors of America, Dr. Emmanuel, Stella Emmanuel, the crazy lady, Miss Cleo.
Demon sperm woman.
I call her Miss Cleo 2.0. Do you remember Miss Cleo? With a fake Jamaican accent, then she got busted. And then when they came to arrest her, it was a fake Jamaican accent. They were like, shit, you're American? She's like, oh, yeah, I was just putting on an accent because it was like getting me. People just believe me a lot more. Which, yeah, honestly, kudos to her for figuring that part out, right? Yeah. To me, if you ask me what's like my absolute favorite accent in the world, is the Jamaican accent. It's just, it's so chill. It's so fun. It's just.
And for her to be able to pull it off, you know, it's you know, kudos to her, yeah.
Yeah. And she was. So I listened to Dr. Emmanuel and Stella Emmanuel, and you know I was thinking about like demon sperm and alien DNA. And then I looked at his parents' pictures, Trump's parents' pictures, and I was like, makes total sense.
He looks like a demon, and she looks like an alien, or vice versa, I guess.
No, daddy is definitely demon sperm. Like, those eyebrows and the crazy hair.
He was a Ku Klux Klan member, as we know. So.
Right? Crazy hair. Like, what is with the dictators and these crazy conservatives and the bad hair? Boris in UK, same thing. What's That's with true. The hair? You know what it is, James? I figured it out. Because they don't have gay friends. Because if you have gay friends, they check you. They check you. They let you know. Like, you look like shit. Like, figure this shit out. Like, come on. You're the president of the United States. You can't get a good haircut? Like, oh, like, honey, let me take you to a good salon. Like, let's do this. My gay friends, they're like, you're not going to go out looking like this. I'm like, you're absolutely correct. Let me go change, you know? And this is what happens. This is why diversity in your life helps.
It's having a variety of different perspectives.
Exactly.
Know, kinds of perspectives.
Precisely. So, James, what is your kind of, what are you thinking in terms of, are you going to, do you want to run for Congress? Do you want to run for Senate? What are the ambitions looking like?
Well, you know, I ran for city council in WeHo twice, in fact. And I ran for the first time when I was 22. I didn't win, obviously, but it was a good starting off point. I learned a lot, obviously, about what it takes to actually run for office. And, you know, people don't know, a lot of people don't know that there's this whole, you know, sort of underground world of Democratic clubs, you know, where you have to go and solicit their endorsement. And, you know, there's a lot of like very, not low level, but you know what I mean? Sort of underground stuff that like your common person that isn't engaged in politics on a close level wouldn't know about. So that really taught me like the mechanics of running for office.
Yeah.
And then I ran again last year, and even though I didn't win, I did pretty well. And, you know, I got an endorsement from John Heilman, who has been on the city council for 35 years and been a real like big West Hollywood sort of icon. So I was really proud of that. And Equality California, which is a big organization, they endorsed me. So, you know, I think for sure politics is definitely what I still want to do. And, I'm doing it right now with my writing, and I'm a big activist, self-proclaimed activist. I mean, I'm very passionate and vocal, and I find ways to be involved and engaged. And I'm sure one day I'll run for office again. I don't know. I doubt it'll be city council. I'll probably wait a while and go on with my life, and then if the right opportunity arrives, whether it's state assembly or something, and down the line, I'll probably wait and just, and also because I don't know what our country is going to look like in the near future. A lot really depends on this election, and who knows, honestly, not to sound alarmist again, but we may not even have a functioning democracy in 6 months.
If he wins, that is, God forbid.
If he wins, but if Biden wins, I think we're in good shape. And but I'm just saying, this is the first time in my life where I really can't see my future past 3 months from now. I think a lot of it, all of our futures depend on how this election goes, and then we can start thinking about like other things and ambitions and projects and
I think just a lot of people feel the way you do, right? I mean, it's just like, we don't know what's going to happen. Like, look, my show, Minority Reports, which is now like the podcast that we're doing right now, is a nationally touring show. And one of our brands, we have a lot of different sub-brands. And one of our sub-brands is Gay AF Show, Gay AF Spock Show. And it does really well. We used to do it in the middle of West Hollywood. And Margaret Cho's headline. We have a lot of wonderful, amazing LGBTQ comics that have been, and it was the official comedy show for LA Pride this year, and all of that just like disappeared, right? All of it has just been gone. And I think about that, and I'm like, man, I was talking to other comic friends, and we're like, I'm like, what are you thinking? They're like, there's no way that we're gonna have stand up for like another year. There's just no way. There's just no way nobody's like going out there like to comedy clubs and stuff like that. I mean, they try to put like outdoor comedy clubs in San Diego, they shut that down. So I don't even know what's going to happen. So I'm totally with you. And I think so many people feel that way. They're like, I don't know what the future holds. Like, I just don't know what's going to happen, you know, and it's just such a strange place to be because as Americans, we've never been here before.
No, no. It's literally like an existential election. I'm prepared, I guess, sort of for the possibility that Trump may win. Like I recognize it's a real possibility, but I can't picture what that looks like. Like I can't picture what the future looks like if that happens. I know it's possible, but yeah. I can't even imagine what that looks like. Like how, whether normal life will even continue after that. I don't even know what that, I can't even imagine what that looks like.
God forbid if he gets elected, I think, if he gets reelected, I think the Canadian immigration website is going to crash all over again. So let's not forget that part.
Well, my parents live in Thailand. So, you know, my parents live in Bangkok, which is in itself kind of crazy. But, you know, if Trump wins again, I mean, I haven't really thought about it seriously because I'm hoping that doesn't happen. But I could see if things get really bad, which I know they would if he wins again. I could see myself in that scenario going away for a while and getting out of the country if it gets to that point. But I'm really praying that that does. We don't even have to contemplate that, you know.
My brother is an Australian citizen, and he's Australian and a Canadian citizen, and so I was just like, I'm just gonna come in as an American refugee with you.
Literally, I mean, at that point. It may be legitimate to go to like Canada or Thailand or Australia or wherever and say, I'm a refugee. I mean, seriously. I mean, because I mean, Trump, we're getting to the point where this is like, as you said, dictator level stuff. And if that happens, I mean, Americans are going to be perfectly within their right to say, I feel like I'm in danger as a minority, as a woman, or as a person of color, as a gay person.
Yep.
I mean, like, last thing I'll say about this, but I have a good friend who literally is a refugee from Russia. And I was talking to him recently, a gay guy from Russia. And I said to him, so when did you move here? And he said, I moved here to America from Russia as a refugee, asylum seeker in 2016. And I went, oh, my God. Like, I mean, and we laughed, like, you know, what terrible timing. I mean, you came here thinking you were getting, like, out of tyranny, and then look where we are now. So,
and let's not forget that Russia has played a huge role in getting Trump reelected, right. And they're going to do everything in their power to try to get him reelected. Right? I mean, look, they're throwing gay people off rooftops in Russia. I mean, it's really really bad. There was a law in place that protected women against domestic violence, and Putin removed it. He got rid of it. He was just like, oh, if it's a domestic violence issue, it's not a government issue. We don't need to deal with it. It's just like, this is some backward-ass shit, man. This is just like madness right now.
And we can see that we're inching closer. Like, I even wrote an article, don't worry, I'll be very quick, but an article about the fact of what was happening in Portland with people being sort of just, you know, shoved into vans, you know, unmarked vans. I had just watched a documentary on HBO, which I recommend, you know, to everybody, called Welcome to Chechnya, I think is what it's called, which is about the gay genocide that's happening in Chechnya, where literally they're disappearing people and putting people into unmarked vans and taking them to detention centers and prisons and torturing them and murdering them. Those images that I saw in that documentary from Chechnya are almost identical to the images we were seeing in Portland and Chicago and New York, where they were putting people, and obviously these people weren't getting murdered, but it's the beginning potentially of, we're doing small little encroachments where they, you know, first it's taking people against their will in unmarked vans, then it'll become, we're detaining them indefinitely, then we're torturing them, then we're murdering them in the name of national security or whatever. God knows what could happen, honestly.
I mean, that's how, right? And you can't do it one shot because then people are like, whoa, because even your supporters are going to be like, whoa, what's happening? You got to give it in dosages. So it just becomes a little bit more acceptable, right? Hitler just didn't rise to power. You know, he was doing it in dosages. Oh, it's for, you know, in German, there was a saying, it said, it's for your own good, right? It's making people feel like, oh, I'm protecting you from these terrifying Jewish people. Okay. It's like, dude, if anybody was fucking terrifying, it was like the Gestapos. Are you fucking kidding me? Okay. Yep. I remember going to Munich. So my ex is a a German Jewish scientist. I met him here when he was a scientist for UCLA, and then he moved back to Germany because he's like one of the top cancer research scientists in Germany. And I remember telling him, I'm like, I'm going to Germany. And I was like, you know, I was thinking about making a my plane stopping in Munich for a little bit. And I was like thinking about venturing up. He's like, don't go to Munich. And I was like, why? And he goes, trust me, you don't want to go to Munich. It's racist as fuck. I was like, really? I was like, nah, stop it. So I was like, I'm going to go. I remember going, James, have you been to Munich?
I have, but when I was very young, very young.
I remember going to Munich and people were looking at me. They were like, bitch, did you forget? Like, did you lose your way? You should go back. Like, you need to hop on the first plane and get the fuck out of here. I saw maybe like one black person and we both made eye contact. We were like, it was like our get out. You know what I'm saying? We were like, oh my God, I think. And you know, when you walk through the streets of Munich, you're like, it makes total sense how Nazism was born right in these streets. Because, first of all, they have super ugly clothes and the clothing stores suck. And they have no sense of fashion. It sucks. And I was like, okay, you guys, like, clearly haven't caught up with the times.
It's funny because I remember my parents and I, horrifying, but funny. When we lived in Europe, in France, we would vacation occasionally in Austria. We'd go skiing in Austria. And I remember we'd sit in some of these restaurants. This is like 15 years ago. So, you know, people who were around, you know, serving in the Second World War were still alive. Yeah. And I remember we would go to, like, you know, the local pub or whatever to have Wiener Schnitzel in Austria. And, you know, and literally we would see guys like with like military, not Nazi tattoos, at least that I remember, but hardcore like military tattoos where you were like, whoa, these guys are really scary. Like, you know, you realize, you know, both in Europe, but also in America, there are still plenty of people who were around back then, but who also are still now adherents to that kind of ideology, you know, and it's Trump, you know, has given them license to say, oh, it's okay to scream your head off in a grocery store or, you know, go to Charlottesville and like pillage a town and drive cars into. So, I mean, that thought process still exists both here and around the world.
You know, I always say that if Pakistanis were white, they'd be German because they have like that same level of like, you know, but only Germans are very, very like proper about their time. That's the only thing that we would not be able to keep up with because the only brown people that ever show up on time are terrorists. Everybody else is like showing up like 30 minutes late, an hour. It's like, do you guys have any concept of time? Jump on time. That's how our weddings are. Like, they're like, they just go on forever. It's like, Jesus Christ, you know, that's about. I remember like visiting Pakistan after a very long time, and my aunt invited me for dinner, and I was like, oh, great, what time? And she was like, 10 p.m. I'm like, you're shitting me, right? She was like, I'm like, 10 o'clock for dinner? She's like, yeah, that's when we eat dinner. I'm like, on what planet is this? Is this normal? This is weird. She's like, oh, yeah. And then I'm like, what time do you go to bed? She's like, oh, we don't go to bed till like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, every day? She's like, yeah, pretty much. Because they're like well-to-do, so they don't really have to kind of worry about something like that. And I was just like, yeah, no, that's not how it works. I was like, I will be coming over for dinner no later than 8 p.m. And she was like, oh, my God, you're like so Americanized. I'm like, did you mean normal? Is that the word you're looking for? This is weird.
In other countries, in Spain or whatever, they do have, not 10, well, actually, no. The Spaniards probably have dinner at like 10 or 11 o'clock, from what I understand.
They have it so, like late too, right?
So I guess it is sort of a Western, maybe, is a better term. England, America, we do have a tendency to eat on the earlier. I'm like a 100-year-old. I usually eat dinner at like 6 p.m. So,
what? You know.
Well, though, but that doesn't mean I go to bed at 6 p.m. I eat. So I don't get too fat. I eat early and then I don't eat for the rest of the night because I want to, like, you know, I don't want to eat too late and you know, get in bed and then like lay there like a big potato.
James, so. I also have a shape I'm working on right now. It's called the round shape, and the pandemic body is in full swing, my friend. you know, I mean, whenever I want to lose weight, I just stand outside in LA for like 10 minutes because it's like, what the hell? It was like 93 degrees today. I'm like,
sanity.
It's like, I'm like, are we in Pakistan right now? Why is this so hot? Like, this is, and not even like, usually LA has like dry heat. We had like humid heat today. And I was like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening in LA, but this is insane. So what are you working on during, like, you got the Duke's Downloads. That's what else are you writing, something or?
Yeah, I write for LGBTQ Nation on a pretty regular basis, usually a couple articles a month. I also write for other places occasionally. I mean, I've written for Hollywood Reporter, HuffPost, as you mentioned, a lot of different places.
Yeah.
I do my weekly show every week, where I interview different kinds of people. Like, I'm interviewing this guy, Josh Flagg, who is on that show, Million Dollar Listing, on this Sunday. So, you know, so I try to have an eclectic, different mix of people. And, you know, and because I'm political, but I also love music and movies, and I'm in pop culture in general. So occasionally I'll throw somebody in there who's sort of a wild card. Like, I've interviewed Trixie Mattel, who's, you know, a big drag queen from RuPaul's Drag Race. So, you know, I like to keep it interesting and eclectic and hear from a lot of different points of view. So, I keep busy with that. And, you know, so I'm trying to like use this time in quarantine to hopefully do something worthwhile with a little bit of my time, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever, James, kind of have like, does your mom ever say, hey, you know, try singing. You want to come sing with me sometimes? Like, yeah. Hey, you know,
you're
a pop star. Like what, like, you know, she's like, I'm jamming session. You want to join me? And you're like, I'm going to go watch some CNN. Like,
actually, it's the opposite. I remember, well, it was a joke, but I remember when I was a kid, when I was probably like 13 or 14, maybe a little younger, I remember I walked in, and I totally meant it as a joke. I walked into her bedroom one night and I said, hey, can I talk to you? And I'm just like, sure. And I say, you know, I'm really thinking about how I want to be a singer. She's like, oh, okay. Like, why don't you sing something for me? And I think I sang Heaven is a Place on Earth, which, you know, is one of her big songs.
Yeah.
And I remember the look on her face was like, she was totally mortified. And she said to me afterwards, she was like, you know, I really think you should stick to, you know, what you know. And then I said, Mom, I'm kidding. Like, I'm joking. And she was like, oh, thank God.
Oh my God.
I do have a terrible singing voice. And I think, and in that case, I think I even intentionally like made it sound as bad as possible. So, but I love music. I mean, you know, and I also, you know, I feel like I got the benefits of like what it is to be a successful musician. So I saw that up close without actually having to do it myself, because it's not easy. And, you know, and to be up close with someone sort of who's achieved that level of success, and to be on the road and to be on stage, you know, I got to be on the side of the stage at Hollywood Bowl and, you know, all these big, amazing places. I feel like I've gotten that experience without actually having to be a musician myself. So, you know, we all have sort of our own little niche thing. She got her music. My dad's, you know, he's retired now, but he was in the movie business. My grandfather was an actor. I've got my political thing. So we've all got our own little sort of thing going on.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just like, it's good that you're one of those, like, I guess, you know, one of the like celebrity kids, in the sense that you're just like, I found my own voice. Like, you're like, this is my path. This is my voice. I'm not, you know, I'm not kind of living under this like shadow of my mom or my dad or my grandfather. I'm just like creating my own path. And, you know, kudos to you for doing that, because I think a lot of kids get lost. I mean, I can't imagine how much pressure that must be to be like, oh my God, I gotta live up to that. Like, they achieve so much, you know, and I'm here like gaining weight on a regular basis just because it's the pandemic. You know, it's like, oh shit.
No, you look great. You look great. You look fantastic. Yeah. But also, no, I relate to you on the weight front. But no, you know,
sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, believe me, I do. But you know, That's another thing. My parents have never, never, ever, ever pressured me to do one thing or another. They always just said, do whatever you want to do. We'll support you. As long as you put the effort in and you commit yourself to it and, you know, and it's healthy and it's not, you know, something, you know, that's detrimental to you. And they're like, you know what, we'll support you in that. And they always have. And, you know, that means they were both very supportive when I ran for office and they've been very supportive in my activism. My mom has been, she and I have done things together, you know, PSAs and all that for PFLAG, which is the, you know, LGBT organization. So yeah, they're behind me 100%. And that's another reason why I feel really lucky and blessed to have them as my parents, you know?
No, they sound wonderful. Are they looking to adopt? Because I'm up for adoption. I don't know. They can always adopt like an immigrant brown child from another country that's grown. That's like fully grown. I can do my own laundry. I clean up after myself. I do dishes. I'm actually a really good cook. That sounds like my Tinder profile. But this is more for like my adoption papers.
Adoption profile. I should have an adoption app for that. That'd be a good idea, actually.
Brown immigrant child seeks pop star to adopt her. Seeks, you know, that would be amazing. We could be siblings, James.
You'd be a great sister, I have no doubt.
Oh, that would be nice. I would be one of those big sisters that would just.
You're my sister anyway. You're my new sister.
James.
Moron.
My heart. You totally fit that little baby brother picture so well. You know, you get the cute cheeks. You're like the adorable face. You have such a sweet personality. You're like, you fit that mold perfectly. I'm just, from this moment on, I am giving up my four older brothers. Because I have brought James Duke Mason as my baby brother into my life. This is it. Okay? I keep looking oranger and oranger as this podcast progresses. I don't know what's happening to me, but something very terrible is happening. But James, this was such a fantastic conversation. I definitely want to bring you on back again and definitely talk to you. I honestly feel like, you know, given your passion and given your intelligence and everything that you stand for, I really hope that one day you do run for Congress or Senate. I will vote for you and I will be cheering you on the entire way. So
that means a lot. I've really enjoyed this. I'm so grateful that we met and that we've connected and I would love to come back. I really would.
Yeah. So. It would be amazing.
I would be. This is what I enjoyed. I'm the guy at the party where, and this is not a joke, where often this will happen. Grant, when we did have parties, but I would go to a party and I would start talking politics, and my friends would go, "Oh my god, like please, do we have to do this right now?" Like, and I'd be like, "This is what I do for fun. Like, for me, this is not the thing to avoid. It's the only reason why I even want to be around people. I don't want to sit there and talk about like." You know, stupid, like meaningless stuff. I mean, I like to joke and banter, but I actually like talking to people about politics. It's like, and at a time when we really can't afford to not be talking about it with people and having a conversation and engaging. So for me, I would have done this off camera and I hope we do. I hope we do have more conversations like this, both on and off camera.
I would love to. I you know, the only reason I go to parties is to judge other people. That's the only reason I go to parties.
I do that too.
The only reason
I can be a bit of a gossip sometimes. So in a sweet sort of innocent way, you know.
Oh no, not me. I'm petty. not me. Not in the slightest. I am like legit roasting people right in my head. I'm like, oh wow. I'm like, you don't have a mirror at home, do you? Wow, you dress like that? Okay. That's great. That's fabulous. James, this was so much fun. I definitely look forward to bringing you back on again. And, where can people find you?
On everything. Twitter.com/JamesDukeMason, Instagram.com/JamesDukeMason. And just to make sure I get it right, let me look really quickly. My Facebook is... let me just make sure it's facebook.com/JamesDukeMason. I believe it is. The answer is yes, it's facebook.com/JamesDukeMason.
And don't forget to tell about your brand new website.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. I just launched a new website where you can find those social media links, my Duke's Download interviews, my all my articles that I write, jamesdukemason.com. That's everything to do with me, if that's of interest.
I'm very much interested, James. I just want you to know. I couldn't afford pearls, so I could like clutch my pearls. So I just have a joker. This is all I have. So, but thank you very much, James. This was lovely. Thank you so much again. Have a lovely weekend, and I will speak to you soon.
You too. Thank you. Talk soon.
Talk soon. Take care, James. That was the wonderful, lovely James Duke Mason. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I had a great time because James is just so lovely to talk to. And we're officially like brothers and sisters. I'm not even shitting you. I am putting in my adoption application with her mom, with his mom, and dad, because I'm ready. I'm ready for a new family. I'm ready to be that immigrant child to be adopted. I'm so ready. But if you guys haven't followed me on YouTube, please do. It might mean the world to me. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Mona's Comedy. I'm on Facebook at Mona Shake Comedian. You guys, stay safe out there. Wear your masks. Wash your hands. Have a good night. Have a great weekend. I will see you on Monday.